Okay. Dr. Professor Gita Lakshmi from Tamil Nadu Agriculture University is not able to come, but I am one of the co-authors, Samsul Huda from the University of Western Sydney, representing. Either Shwash or Jerry, could you please let me know if I'm going overboard more than 20 minutes? Okay. I shouldn't be, but just let you know. Okay. The background of this particular paper is a few years back. That was, I think, 1999 to 2001, Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research funded a project on the same topic of this symposium, which is capturing the benefits of seasonal climate forecasts in agricultural management. And I was working with Tamil Nadu Agriculture University, particularly on the farm decision-making component. And Gita Lakshmi was part of the member in the team, project team at that time. And she continues on that activity in India. And the other members of the team are the three members from their university, but also we have people from IRI and CSIRO, like Peter Hem and a few others in this particular activity that's going on. Okay. As you can see, the title said, Can Seasonal Climate Forecast Improve the Food Security Under Changing Climate? Now, the lessons that we learned from our previous project is the questions keep coming. Three basic things. How advanced can we predict the lead time of seasonal climate forecast? How reliable are they and accurate? And these are some of the questions that came on the floor. Similar kind of questions keep coming. So we'd like to share some of that, those points that we have learned through this process. Now, some key questions that Gita wanted to ask is, can we develop improved statistical seasonal climate forecasts? Can we develop some decision analysis tools that effectively build risk management capacity to use the climate forecast in some informed ways? And can the seasonal climate forecast be useful across the value chain? Can you identify some key nodes in information networks that can enhance the communication about climate forecasts? Can we develop approaches that integrate seasonal climate forecast into some of the decisions and the evaluation of the decisions that you make? And then, of course, can we integrate the ideas of public values into ongoing project decisions? Now, one of the, again, a little bit of background, when we were doing late 90s, early 2000, at that point in time, India Meteorology Department, along with others, who used to give their seasonal, well, the climate forecast information, and some even 1 to 5 days advance with the forecast. And what Tamil Nadu Agriculture University, along with other institutions in India, were doing at that time is get that information, and their interdisciplinary team of specialists in the university, along with the extension people, and used to communicate with the region what really it means and what can be done. And this is what attracted us to work with that group. And since then, as you can see, the technology developed, particularly communication technology developed, and what people can do this. And this is the basically message, is what can be done with the new technology that's coming through. Now, this is the study locations in Tamil Nadu, Dindigul, and the farmers, agriculture department officials, and input dealers. Now, at that time, when we were working, we used to work for 10 villages, and with each village, 30 farmers. And I'll share some experience from there as you go along. Now, When you say the integration framework, like many of us, we know this kind of diagram. One, of course, is the climate analysis, the climate information, and that is coming from CSIRO, Australia, different sources, including IRI, informations. And then one of the most important things that we learned as we worked on this project is very important to bring in the social science aspects. So our training, most of the team members, the training is in what we call agronomy, soils, climate background. And when you do some decision-making aspects, it's very important to understand how people's mind works. Like the questions were there to Peter, why the farmers not adopting the risk-averse kind of things, why they do what they do. And that's very important. This is what one of the things that we learned, as you say, in this project, that how can we bring the social science aspects of the human people that we are working in a particular situation. We all behave differently, right? And how do you bring that in? And this is what the social network analysis, one of the important things that evolved over time, and particularly making decisions on farm and off farm, okay? And of course, the what you call the capacity building. Now, the seasonal, the climate forecast skills for this region and Tamil Nadu, as you can see from the skills factor, and I think I understand from Peter that you're saying value of 0.4 and above, and Gita and the group say 0.2 and above would suggest some modest skill for these locations. And I think the rank probability skill score measures the improvement of the multi-category probabilistic forecast values. Now, of course, you all know that zero means no skill and one is perfect skill, and you've seen some figures from previous presentations. Now, the social network perspectives and that has evolved, and the people in the group at Tamil Nadu Agriculture University has been connecting to a number of people in the region, and particularly in the farms level. And some of the, I think it's very critical how that particular network is working, and I wish Gita were here and shared that particular experience that's going through. The communication with the real people, real time, and real decisions is happening, and enthusiasm that people are now showing in this whole information on agrometeorology network that's developing. Some of the implications are that it identifies points for intervention to facilitate equitable access to and effective dissemination and communication of climate information. And as I have learned over time, I mentioned to Peter yesterday, discussing with another Peter back in Australia, that so critical that some of the numbers, when you present, what it really means. Like I do, any times I present a probabilistic curve, we need to stop and think what it means. So I noticed Peter did a similar sort of thing when he was presenting. So when you pass that information to other people, like we've got about 40 people here, how they receive that information, understand it, and then translate it in the real world. Now, I'll give you one example that I've learned from this exercise. In one of our projects related to this in India, as I said, we're working with 30 farmers in 10 villages, and we used to have a workshop and communicate the local language with the people there and all that. So one particular message I remember, that when you said that 70% probability that in next 3 months the location will have a medium rainfall, at least 70% time. Most people understood that. Well, the way we understand. One particular farmer thought that 70% of the mean rainfall or median rainfall is 500 millimeter. So 70% of 500 is whatever it is, 350 or something. They thought this is what they're going to get. And when the next time they made decisions on this and all that, when the next time we interacted, we found that this is what happened. And in fact, it turned out to be the bad year. And so the message is, like happened here, 70%, 40% thing then, that that particular message didn't get through. That means one in 3 years, there's a chance there may not be a million rainfall. And this is a simple thing and communication. So we realized it's a communication, understanding, education is very, very important. Of course, you need to have a reliable science, but how do you communicate the science in terms of decision making? And then you can see that that happens throughout the value chain. It is from the input supplier to farmer and then wholesaler and to other kind of processes that goes on. Now, I saw from Jerry's presentation, he has put some good way that if it's a short-term prediction forecast, what can you do? And similarly, in different ways that can be done, and some of the information. So I think what I'm saying, the one is getting the science right as much as you can, instead of waiting for the final thing, but you can keep working with the probabilistic number, with these all what you call deficiencies, be it known, and then communicate and work with it. There are some formal and informal mechanisms of sharing the information. Support improved decision-making at multiple stages and embed the forward planning in day-to-day business. What Geta thought is that is one of several forms of information that would influence planning and decision-making. Now, size of the business or strategic scope is a key factor, of course, and you see the people vary depending on the risk-averse or risk-takers. And then we need to clearly understand and address some of the barriers that we have. Now, number of ways of doing it. One is the in terms of decision analysis, we can meet with the people, discuss, demonstrate, use the technology that we have, all kinds of facilities, and try to explain the probabilities concepts. Now, this is one of the good examples, and it came from one of our previous work with Dr. Peter Heyman from South Australia. Now he's South Australia currently, and he's the co-author for this. Just one good example, and he loved to bring his chocolate wheel to demonstrate. If any of you had listened to his presentation, I think he does a very elegant job in terms of explaining the concept. It's a very, sometimes could be easy, sometimes could be very hard to understand. Now, one example, I think Peter has presented the nitrogen applications, and we want to show that as well here in different ways, that to make a choice or make a decision, any decision that we make, it has a chance and consequences, right, what you do. Now, what rate nitrogen to use, for example, this depends on whether if you use the three categories, poor, average, and good season. Now, let's say the 20 units for poor season and 60 units for an average season, 100 units to maximize the benefits that can be there. Now, the question is, if the situation is, okay, we say that it's a poor year, and as you know, in reality, it can turn out to be a poor year, so that means the prediction is correct, the forecast is correct. So in that case, it's all good. It's a balanced budget of nitrogen. So we say poor year, apply 20 kilos of nitrogen, it's good. If the season turns out to be an average, so then we should have used a bit more nitrogen, right? So that means we are losing an opportunity. And if that particular year, instead of poor year that we are thinking of, turns out to be a good year in terms of rainfall amount and distribution, so that means we lost that opportunity. Okay, similarly, I just take another example of a very good season. Let's say we forecast the seasonal climate forecast says it's a very good season, so the farmers apply 100 units of nitrogen. If it is a good year, great. So prediction was there, we took the management decisions right and did everything right, got benefits and the money made. But if it turns out to be a poor year, then what happens? So applied nitrogen. And of course the question can come is, all kinds of questions can be discussed and asked, that 100 kilos of nitrogen could have applied in different times, and those specific issues. But overall the message is that the risk, the question that was asked before, why some farmers don't take risk. Okay? So this is the message that you want to do. And then of course it has other implications. If you apply more nitrogen, less rain, or less nitrogen over rain, in terms of not only economics, but also the environmental aspects. You all know that is what happens, right? And then other decisions that come through between two crops, like whether you grow maize or cotton. Okay. And in this particular case, you can do either climatology analysis or add with it some seasonal climate focused information as well. Now, simply showing that, let's say, the two situation between maize and growing cotton. Okay, so in some years, one does better, and then the cotton, as you know that. And then some calculations were done in terms of analysis, like Peter showed before about the gross analysis, gross margins on an average. This is about dollar per hectare, I understand. This is what it is, that there's a crossover between two crops. It depends on the season, okay? What sorts of rainfall distribution and rainfall amounts. Okay. So similarly, if you do that similar sort of thing, and you can see between two farmers again, the decision somebody may take, if you just compare these two particular figures, one point in time and another point in time, another kind of decisions, and of course it does better, but a different time frame. Okay, and the never average profits before and after the forecast, very similar to, in the similar direction, Peter, that the using seasonal climate forecast, they could a better return if you're doing over time. And some conclusions from this is seasonal climate forecast has the potential to increase the economic advantage and agricultural production by reducing agricultural risks. It gives opportunity for farmers to modify their strategic farming decisions to minimize adverse weather events impact and to find opportunities within favorable events. Very similar, but begs lots of questions and comments. And seasonal climate forecast is utilized on-farm crop variety choice, land allocation among different crops, land configuration and on-farm decisions, input sourcing, stock maintenance, different examples I think I've discussed before.